Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Here we are. Hopefully everybody had a great Thanksgiving. You stuffed your bellies. You are able to spend some time with some family. And I know that I have several Thanksgivings I need to attend. So when this podcast actually launches, I will have one down and two to go. Other than that, by the time you're also listening to this, I will already probably have had two helpings of leftovers on Friday. And I'm slowly probably getting diabetes. Other than that, it's Black Friday. I really, really hope that you are not out there in the madness. I know in the past I've been invited to go, and in certain instances kind of been forced to go. But this year I have stood my ground and I said I will not participate in Black Friday. So I'm probably laying on a couch watching football and enjoying a piece of pie or turkey, cold turkey sandwich or something like that. So if you are participating in Black Friday, hopefully this podcast gets you through the long lines. It gets you through your wife or girlfriend kind of flipping through a rack of clothes while you're sitting out in the hallway of the mall contemplating suicide. But yeah, hopefully this podcast gets you through your Friday. I tell you what, there's still plenty of time to get out and hunt, guys. I know for me, I've already tagged out on my buck. I have a couple more does that I'd like to get out there and try to shoot. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to be in the cards for me from a scheduling standpoint until late season. I have three doe tags left that I'd like to fill. And then I also, at the same time, am going to try to get my late season buck tag here in Iowa. And basically that's a muzzleloader tag that you can get, and you can use a primitive weapon like a bow and arrow setup to use to fill that tag as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Today is the second installment of the Hunting Gear Wish List podcast. And I really hope you guys liked the very first one, because we got a couple more of these today included coming down the pipe. And I'm really hoping you guys found this interesting. I love talking about hunting gear with regular Joes, and that's what this is. So if anything, I know I'm having fun doing it. But before we get into today's podcast, let's hear what John Livingston from Deer Lab has to say about how easy Deer Lab is to use.
Deer Lab is a web-based service that helps you manage and analyze your trail camera photos. We work with any trail camera. It doesn't matter what kind of trail camera you have. You upload your photos to our service. As long as it has a timestamp, we can work with it. And so we basically go in and pull weather data from your local weather station and give you additional information that trail cameras can't capture. We also aggregate all of the data together, so you know when and where this particular buck is moving, how he's moving by wind direction and wind speed. There's a lot of different reports that we can provide, but we basically are trying to simplify the process. Instead of having to manually understand what he's doing, we automate a lot of that information.
If you guys want to find out more information about Deer Lab, please visit deerlab.com/ninefingers. That's the number nine followed by the word fingers, deerlab.com/ninefingers, and sign up for their free 30-day trial period. That's only an offer to the Nine Finger Chronicles listeners, so take advantage of that. Now, let's get into today's podcast with returning guest Adam Parr. All right. On the phone with me now, all the way from Colorado, is returning guest Adam Parr. How you doing today, Adam?
Hey, Dan. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. I must say that me and you have been texting a lot the last couple days, and I'm a bit jealous that you've been out in eastern Colorado chasing whitetails.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a blast. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about eastern Colorado for whitetails. I guess when I think of, hey, let's go whitetail hunting, I don't think of eastern Colorado. What's it like out there? What have you seen this last couple weeks?
Yeah, it's kind of a sleeper, and most people don't really think of whitetails. They usually think of muleys or different animals like elk or sheep people come to Colorado for. But there's actually a pretty good whitetail population, and it's rather, I guess, easy in the scheme of things as compared to like the Midwest of gaining access to hunt properties.
Okay.
But it's very challenging in the standpoint of really it's flat. There's hardly any terrain and there's not a lot of trees. I mean, there's river bottoms.
Yeah.
But it's even more desolate than what I was hunting in western Kansas, and I thought that was pretty darn desolate. But the eastern plains of Colorado, let me tell you, they're definitely challenging. So I've kind of been focusing on CRP fields for like bedding area and in close proximity to food sources, so cut corn fields and wheat fields, and I've been able to get into some good whitetails. And unfortunately this last weekend I missed a shot on a, he's close to 140, not a monster, but I hit a hit some of the weeds when I shot, and the arrow just deflected, and it was a miss. So but it's been a lot of fun. It's been a challenge. But
so how do you approach that? You just glass from your truck and then you see something from a distance and then make your move, or are you already in the field where you do your glassing?
So it's a little bit of both. I predominantly will glass from my truck. And when I say there's really no terrain, there is some terrain where you have a little bit of an advantage, but yeah, it's nothing like what you have in Iowa or the hilly terrains of the mountains. But yeah, so I'll basically sit up on the road in my truck and I will glass, because the CRP, you really can't see anything unless they stand up where they're moving. So if they're bedded, you're not going to see them. So I glass, and once I see a buck I want to shoot, I'll either leave from the truck if I've got the wind right, or I'll drive around to the other side and just start kind of working my way in them. But nice. If it's in the mornings when there's not a lot of wind, or late in the evening, I'll kind of post up in an area that I won't have to necessarily move, hoping that they're going to come by, because really you want that midday. Usually the wind picks up, and ideally you want something around a 15 to 20 mile an hour wind to cover your movement as far as the sound when you're moving through there. So, and usually in the mornings from where I've been hunting, it's been pretty mild or hardly any wind. So you're not going to be able to move around in there. So locate them from the truck and then spot and stalk.
Nice. So, you missed the guy this week. How many stalks did you actually go on before you actually had a shot opportunity?
That was actually the second one, and I actually tried stalking in on him last weekend. I was hunting this last weekend, but the weekend before that, same deer, I tried getting on. So really it was the second stalk I've really only been hunting 2 weekends now. I didn't even start hunting till, what was it, November 12th, something like that. That was my first hunt. But yeah, I was kind of waiting. I'd seen some other bucks, but nothing I wanted to shoot. So it's a matter of just locating one that you want to go after. So, and at this point I've got very few deer on that property that are, you know, 120 or better, probably 130 and this 140. Gotcha. That's the biggest I've seen.
So is it, are they mature just with small antlers, or is it just kind of a 3-year-old type of scenario? What's the age?
Yeah, for most part, what I've seen is 3-year-olds. I haven't seen anything. I've got my trail camera up. I actually got my Exodus camera up there. I bought one of those in the summer, and this was the first chance I had to put it out. And I've got some pictures of a couple 3-year-olds and some other 2-year-olds, a lot of year and a half old bucks. But yeah, just the age structure from what I'm seeing, I don't know if it gets hunted hard year to year or just if the older deer aren't on this parcel that I'm currently hunting. But gotcha. Yeah, nothing like a 150, 160, what I had at my Kansas properties.
Okay. Well, today, this is a continuation of this new series that we're doing, the hunting gear wish list kind of series that we're doing. And I've already done one, and now this is kind of the continuation of it. And the whole process or the whole idea of this is to get some hardcore bow hunters on to talk about products that they don't have that maybe they wish they had, or they have, have been saving up for a while. So, just like the last podcast that we did, the categories are $100, give or take, $500, give or take, and, $2,000, give or take. So I think, we'll just start off like we did last time. And Adam, why don't you tell us what, if you had $100 left over and, had some extra money to spend, what is the first product that you would want to buy?
So the $100 category, I am going with Onyx Maps, subscription. So if you're not familiar with Onyx Maps, it's essentially a GPS system, mapping system. And it's just much more, in the scheme of things, it's much more user-friendly than what I found.
Okay.
Comparative to like a handheld GPS, you can actually get a chip. You can buy the chip for your current GPS, or you can just download the app on your cell phone and use your cell phone for your GPS. But each subscription is $35 per state.
Okay.
So I would buy three subscriptions, which would put me at $105, a little over. So I would go with Colorado, Kansas, and Iowa.
Okay.
So I just like Onyx Maps a lot because it's much more user-friendly. You can change different layers to see what's public, what's private. You can see topography. You know where you're at all times. With the private land parcels, it shows you landowner names and addresses. So wow, that's great for me. Like if I'm going out to Kansas or Colorado and I want to knock on some doors, I know the landowner name before I get there. It's an aerial photo, just aerial map, just like Google Earth or a mapping system. That way, so you can still see the terrain and what kind of cover you're working with. And you can mark stuff on there. It's just super user friendly, and it's literally changed the way I have hunted, because I want to know, especially if I'm hunting public land, I want to know where those boundaries are at.
Yeah.
How to maybe find some areas that might be tougher to access. And to me, it's just it literally has changed the way I've hunted, and I just started using it last March, so not even a year, and I can't believe I've hunted without it. To date.
So you've already used this product. You would just buy additional maps for the app.
Yeah. Well, you have to buy it by per year. So it runs out each year. You have to resubscribe. And then, yeah, I would just buy additional states that I don't currently have. Like right now I just have Colorado.
Okay.
And which is all I really need, because that's all I'm hunting this year. But if next year I plan on hunting Colorado, Iowa, and Kansas, so I'd want all three states for Onyx Maps.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but if you don't get any cell phone reception in those areas, or maybe you don't get your mobile data, does that app still work?
Yep. It does. The only thing you have to do is, for example, if you know you're going to be hunting a certain area, like most of the time you're not going to be hunting like five units, or you're pretty much for that day or for that week, you're going to be pretty concentrated. But if you know where you're going to be hunting, what you got to do is just go in and pre-download the map.
Okay.
And essentially you just select all these squares that are for that specific area. pre-download those at your house, like on Wi-Fi or with your cell phone reception. And then, so then they're a saved map. So
okay,
you can literally turn your phone on airplane mode and still pull up the map and still have all the intuitive features and see the boundaries and still know where you're at on the GPS.
Okay.
So that's all you have to do. Yep.
So your navigation moves with you even in that airplane mode.
Yep, exactly. Okay, cool. Yep. You can still mark coordinates. Everything still syncs up. And then what I do is I have an external battery charger that I bring with me, especially on elk hunting.
Okay.
Where I can't go back and charge it all the time and just keep it charged that way. But yeah, you can still view the maps even if you're out of cell phone service.
Cool. Cool. And you said that was $35 per state. You get three states. So yeah, over 100, just
a little over 100.
Okay, cool.
Yep. And some states might even be 30. I just know Colorado is 35, and I think I've seen other ones on there for 30, but yeah, it's an annual fee and you got to buy it every year.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the second product in the $100 range.
So my second product would be a new hunter safety system vest, and specifically the Ultralight Flex. And that vest retails at $99.95. So it's $100.
Okay.
And
why did you decide to get a new, why would you decide to get a new safety harness?
So I currently have a hunter safety system vest, but it's a few years, it might even be like 3 or 4 years old now. And I like it a lot, but it's a little bit on the heavy side. It's a little bit bulkier. It's still one of the ones that's using, I don't know if you remember the ones that are using like the seat belt buckles.
Yep.
So it's kind of heavy. It's kind of clunky. It's got the metal on, more metal on there. So you're making more noise if you hit up against your stand or you clink your bow on it.
Okay.
So not that it's not functional right now. It's just, the super or the ultra light flex harness is a little bit more of a lower profile harness where it's not as big of like straps, and it's not like a big vest like my current one is. Mine looks like a hunting vest that I'm wearing right now. This one's more like you see just kind of like the straps that are skinnier. So it's lighter weight. This one only weighs 2 pounds. And, but still meets the need. So shedding some weight and, some improved features that make it a little bit quieter is why I would go to that vest and why I would like to upgrade.
Okay. So other than a hunter safety system, did you look at any other, safety harness systems that, before you decided, hey, maybe I like this one the best?
I didn't actually, and I know there are other ones on the market that are similar, like Muddy has some, I think Gorilla, can't remember, but I'm most familiar with Hunter Safety System, and they're kind of, I guess, industry standard, or they've been around the longest, so it's just what I'm most familiar with, and so that's kind of what I went with. Yeah.
Gotcha. And that you said that was basically $100.
Yep. $99.95.
Okay. All right. Now, let's move on to the third product in that $100 category.
So my third product would be a game cart.
Okay.
And I would specifically go with the Cabela's Deluxe game cart. And that retails, it's actually, so I was checking it out today, and Cabela's is actually running a special on it right now. And they do, I see them pop it up every like month or couple months, but normally it's $150, but they've got it on sale for a couple weeks for $99.99. So it's a $100 game cart.
Okay. So when it's not on sale, it's $150 roughly.
Yeah. And there are some other ones on there too that are at $100 normally, and they're pretty similar. I just figured, hey, I could probably catch this one on sale at some point.
Gotcha.
But yeah, game cart.
Of all the products that are out there, why would, you know, let's say, you know, you've chosen three products here, and that was the assignment, but why of all the other products out there in that $100 category, why a game cart?
So for me specifically, and this is just for me specifically, I feel like I've, as far as like the gadgets and hunting gear, not that I don't have everything, but I have the essentials that I need, like a good bow and all the accessories and, you know, range finders and kind of all that stuff. So for me, I'm kind of looking at, because of the style of hunting I'm doing with public land hunting a lot of the time, whether it's whitetail or western hunting for elk or big game, I'm looking at more along the lines of trying to either A, get gear in if I'm packing stuff in, or mainly getting game out. So if I've got a whitetail down on public land, like last year in Kansas, me and my buddy had to drag my buck. I mean, we could have quartered it out, but we probably had to drag the deer a half mile and we didn't have any sort of cart, and it just makes it super difficult. So if I could spend $100, and it's always been something I wanted, but I just never haven't spent the money on it, a game cart would definitely suit me well.
Okay. Makes sense. And then when you were looking at this specific game cart in that $100 to $150 range, what, were there other game carts out there that were maybe like really expensive or, either like dirt cheap that you looked at as well, or is it just kind of the, hey, I was flipping through Cabela's and I like this one?
Yeah, it was kind of a game cart to me is a game cart. There's some features that I like. There's one, I forget the name of it, but it's got four wheels instead of two.
Okay.
And the wheels have like an independent kind of suspension system. So it makes it really nice for going over like logs or downed trees or sticks or rocks. It yeah. kind of moves and it's easier to get over it, and it doesn't kind of like want to tip it over. So I was looking at one of those, and I think it was closer to $200 for that one. So right. if I had a little bit more budget, then I'd probably go up to something like that. But this one was a good mix of, I mean, it didn't have everything on it, but it seemed like a good mix of size, good weight. So it wasn't super heavy to like haul in by itself, and just seemed like it was functional enough to throw a deer on there, or if I'm in a certain area of elk country where I can throw a quarter or two on there, at least to minimize some of that kind of strain on your back or packing everything off the mountain. Right. I think it could be a very useful tool.
Okay, cool. All right. So that rounds out the $100 category. Now let's go ahead and move into the $500 category. What's the first one you have for us there?
Product number one, I went with the Kennetrek 400 gram Mountain Extreme hunting boot. Okay. So that one retail at $485. Okay. So just under $500.
Okay. What is it? And this is a crazy product too, because there are several boot companies out there, all claiming that they're the toughest, you know, the badass boot on the market. I hear a lot of, I've never personally tried Kennetrek, but I've heard good things about them. Why Kennetrek and why that boot specifically?
So Kennetrek, one of my coworkers here, he's a pretty big hunter, and he's lived out in Colorado for 10 years, and he has these exact same boots and he absolutely loves them. And so I personally, like you, I've never actually tried them on, but I've heard such good reviews about them, especially for Western hunting, that even though they are super expensive, I mean, most people are like $485, $500 for boots, you're crazy. But from what I've heard from reviews and the features about them, I think they're definitely worth the money for upgrading. And this is something on my wish list probably for 2017 that I most likely I will buy.
Yeah.
because they're so much better than my current boots.
Right. I tell you what, that's one, when you think about it, especially if you're going to be in the mountains, maybe not so much as a tree stand hunter, but my boots when I went out west were really broken. I got wet. I got them wet and they were kind of damp or wet the entire rest of the trip. But I can understand now after doing doing what I've done for so many years, that a good pair of boots or footwear can literally change the amount of time you spend out there. It can change your attitude. It can change so I can actually see spending, in my opinion, that amount, if not more, on a really good pair of boots to make one comfortable, whether it's in the tree stand or out on the mountainside.
That's exactly it. Because if you think about it, especially for Western style hunting, where you're on the move constantly going through rugged terrain, your feet are everything. If you can't walk because you have blisters or your feet are wet and your wet feet are causing blisters, or you're uncomfortable or you're cold or you don't have the support. It's literally everything. And that's what that's your number one tool in my mind to be able to put the miles on.
Right.
So like you said, as a tree stand whitetail hunter, that's walking, 100 yards or, is doing more of a stationary position style hunting, which most of the Midwest, does. Yeah. I have $100 pair of rubber knee highs and that's perfect. Cause those are warm. They're waterproof. They're comfortable, but there's no way in hell I'd walk around the mountains with them or even Western Kansas or Eastern Colorado. I mean, I still put on quite a bit of miles out there when I'm spot and stalk hunting, but, the terrain's not necessarily as rugged as the mountains, but I would so much rather have a good hiking style boot if I'm spot and stalk and walking than just more of a cheap pair of rubber boots or something along those lines.
For sure. So what is this boot, this particular boot, is it for warm weather? Is it for cold weather? Or is it kind of right in the middle?
It's kind of right in the middle. It's a 400 grams of insulation and that's currently what I have. So like right now I have for Western hunting in the mountains, what I use this year elk hunting and what I'm currently using out in Eastern Colorado, it's Cabela's, it's a Mendel boot, which is a good quality boot. I think I bought them from Cabela's for $209. So relatively expensive. So I'd say they're middle of the road and they're good quality, but where I really noticed, and they fit really good, they're super comfortable, but where I really am wanting more, especially for tackling the mountains, is better support. And as far as like your ankle support and foot support,
right.
And then two, being much more waterproof. And I've heard from the Kennetrex, they're completely waterproof. Whereas mine say that they're waterproof, but it was kind of like your situation. My feet got wet and they were kind of wet for a few days and we're crossing rivers and it's not like I'm walking through water all the time, but when you're trying to cross a river or a stream, you definitely want your waterproof, your boots to be waterproof, because as soon as they get wet, you're either having to stop for a while to dry them out, or you're just going to deal with it and be uncomfortable and potentially get blisters and whatnot. So from what I've seen and read and talked to people in person about, they're a bulletproof boot, super high quality. They're going to last you for years. They fit great right out of the box. So there's very little break-in period. And with that 400 grams of insulation, it's kind of an all seasons boot. Like my current boots are 400 grams right now. And people talk about them being too hot if you're hunting in September, for example, an archery season for elk. And when I was using them this year, I had one pair of kind of medium weight merino wool socks and those 400 gram boots. And I really didn't feel my feet get overheated really at all.
Okay.
Even with that 400 grams insulation. So I think it's with that, it's a good all season boot, and it's going to be a bulletproof boot for the mountain. So I probably will have this for 2017.
Okay. All right. So moving on to the second product in the $500 category.
Second product, I'm going with a Redneck Hay Bale Blind.
Okay.
And specifically, it's the Sportsman HD model. And that one retails at $549, so we're a little bit over budget, but it's right about that $500 category.
Right. Okay. Now, and I take it it's because, you know, there's not a lot of trees in Colorado and or Western Kansas where you do a lot of whitetail hunting. But, and again, there are a lot of blinds, hunting blinds on the market. Why Redneck, and specifically why the hay bale?
Yeah. So I'm not really a big blind hunter in general, and I've hunted out of some blinds, mainly pop-up blinds.
Yeah.
And I've never really spent the money on them. I mean, I've had some that are like $150, $200, and you kind of get what you pay for. And to me, I went with this blind, like you said, for one, I'm hunting in areas without any trees. And specifically, I'm trying to, like, this would be more of an early season kind of thing that I want, because in Eastern Colorado and Western Kansas, there's, in some of these fields, you have, like, for example, on my Western Kansas property, he has a water tank.
Yep.
that there's really no trees around, but the deer just flock to it like crazy. And I've so wanted to be able to hunt there over that, especially like early September or mid September when Kansas archery season opens.
Right.
And so it'd be such an advantage to be able to hunt there and try out some of those spots. And so I've looked at the Redneck blinds for a while. And I think, did you have them on a podcast? I can't remember.
Yep. We had Redneck.
You might have. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just listening to that and the quality of the design and everything, you know, it's not going to fade. They use different materials where it's not going to rust. So for one, the quality, the more I bow hunt and the more I spend time doing this, I've found that you kind of do have to pay a little bit extra, but with that, you typically get better quality products. And for me, the more I do it and the older I get, I will pay the extra price to get better quality. So I don't want my stuff to fail or not get the experience I want when I'm hunting. So Redneck, from the standpoint of reliability and quality and just a good overall product. I also, one of the factors specifically with the hay bale blind, I like about it because I think it blends in a lot better.
Yeah.
With more of the agriculture environment that I'm hunting in. So they're like, for example, in some of those neighboring fields, there's these, I think it's like standing feed. So they cut the feed and then they bale it up into round bales for the cows. And there's a ton of those around. So I could probably pop that thing up next to this water hole or wherever I'm at in this open field. And I think those deer would get really used to it or wouldn't even really pay much attention to it. So there's other blind options that you can go with, such as more of like a camo pattern. But I like the hay bale because I think it's going to blend in a lot better for my environment specifically.
Right. That's one thing that I've heard about the hay bale blind. It, you know, aside from all the specs, the product specs and stuff like that, is the fact that it takes less time for an animal to get used to it. And for someone who may be on a, you know, a 4-day hunt, that's kind of important.
Exactly. And in this particular blind, it fits up to two hunters, probably one very comfortably. So you got a lot of room to move around. It's not like a super huge blind, but definitely functional enough that you can move around and still bow hunt out of it. Its dimensions are 70 inches in height, 64 inches in length, and 72 inches in width. So again, it's not the biggest blind on the market, but definitely functional for what I would need. It weighs 122 pounds, so not super lightweight, but definitely I could still, you know, grab a buddy or even just load that thing up in the back of my truck and move it to a different place pretty easily, I would imagine. So yeah, I think it would just be a good fit, especially if somebody wants to come out and hunt with me. It's something where you don't have to get all your gear around to set up a tree stand or get them into a safety harness. It could be something that you could throw a heater in if you're looking to do a late season hunt. I think it would be a really good tool for me to have, in particular the area that I'm hunting. And about $500, I think it'd definitely be worth it.
And what was the price? You said that was $550?
Yeah, $549.
Okay.
Is what I've seen it for. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, moving on to the last product in the $500 range.
So last product would be a wireless trail camera.
Okay.
And specifically, I went with the Covert Blackhawk 12.0.
Okay.
And it's a Verizon service, so that's what I have. And that retails for $449.95, so under a little bit under budget there.
Right. Okay. Why a wireless trail camera?
So for where I hunt, I don't have the luxury of driving 20 minutes down the road or walking out my back door to be able to check cameras. Most of my properties, like where I'm hunting at right now, it's a 4-hour drive. And if I'm hunting Western Kansas, I'm looking at 5.5-6 hour drive. And also I would benefit from throwing it up here in the mountains where you have service. Like for example, where I shot my bull this year, I actually do have full LTE cell service. So I could throw up a camera there even. So being that I don't live somewhere where I can just go out in my backyard or drive 20 minutes away and check a camera, I have been wanting a cell phone camera for a while it's instant. So you don't have to do anything. There's little intrusion and I could be 100 miles away. I could be 1,000 miles away and I'm still going to get those pictures.
Right. And are you going with a product like this because it's one of those things where you want to be able to use your vacation time as efficient as possible, or just because you like seeing stuff in real time?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I love checking trail cameras because we all love it. It's like opening up a Christmas present almost. But yeah, and plus too, I think it would be a lot more efficient in my scouting. So I wouldn't have to necessarily spend a weekend and go out and check some cameras and take up, you know, a full day or a couple of days of time due to the amount of driving I have to do to get to where I need to go.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit of both. And I don't need it per se, but it would be nice. And I went with the Covert brand just because I've used their cameras in the past. I like them. They're definitely a good camera. Now if Exodus had a, I think they should come out with a wireless trail camera, but if they had a cell phone camera, I would definitely buy that just from what I've used so far with their cameras. I really like them. And I think with their direct consumer model, they probably could come out with a camera that's probably cheaper than what, you know, somebody who's selling through a conventional retail market.
I don't know if I should say this or not, but I heard some things. I heard some things.
All right.
So, but anyway.
Note taken.
Yeah, note taken. but as far as wireless, I think Covert switched to Verizon. I think they might have been on AT&T because I have a wireless trail camera too. But and it's an old Covert. But my hunting property, where I want to have, you know, because ideally, you don't want a trail camera. You don't want to use a wireless trail camera, like something that's easy to get to. You want it someplace where you don't want any intrusion. And unfortunately for me, that's some river bottom ground where it's in a low spot surrounded by some bluffs or some ridges. And I don't even get my cell phone service there. So, it's one of those things where it's just, it sucks. And it's pointless. I mean, it can still be used as a trail camera, but I'm in the same boat as you. I would love someday to get another wireless trail camera.
Yeah. And like for your situation, it's a little bit different because a lot of people for Midwest hunting or hunting smaller properties, they're using it more along the lines because they don't want to intrude or they don't want to disturb that area, at least not, and potentially, you know, blow a deer out of the area. I would be using it more along the lines because I live so far away.
Right.
And I don't have the luxury of checking them as often as I'd like.
Right.
And most of the places I'm putting them in, I mean, there's actually probably one place, there's a pretty thick bedding cover on one of my properties in Kansas that I could probably throw it in and because I don't like to go in there because they bed in there. But for the most part, I can get to a lot of my cameras in areas that are easy to get to and they're not in places that are close proximity to where they're bedding.
Right. Okay. So a wireless trail camera for $450. And that's the last one on the $500 range. Now we bump up to a $2,000 product range. So tell us the first product there.
So first product, I'm going with a Maven Optics spotting scope.
Okay.
And that is the S1 model, and that's a 25x50, and that retails for $2,100. So I'm a little over budget there, but right around that $2,000 mark.
Yep. Okay. Now Maven is another direct to consumer, product. And I've actually had those guys on the show as well. They were one of the very first companies, I think, that came on the podcast. But there are, and I think I talked about this on the last podcast that we did, but there are several optics brands out there. Why Maven?
Well, first and foremost, for me, it comes down to price. So a lot of optics companies, and as you mentioned, they're a direct to consumer model. They can offer a much higher quality piece of glass for a much lower price because of the model that they're only selling direct. So first and foremost, it comes down to price. Two, it comes down to quality as well. And I met the guys, I've been at some shows with them and I've actually tested out and tried out their spotting scopes and binoculars. And they are very good. I mean, they're super high quality. Where you notice it a lot from what they say and, from what I've read. And I think I listened to your podcast with them as well, but they perform really well in low light scenarios. So it's essentially you're getting maybe something comparable to along the lines of maybe a $3,500 or $4,000 spotting scope for close to $2,000. So
do you currently have a spotting scope?
I don't. Right now I'm currently just using a 12x50 pair of binoculars, which is, I would say it's a pretty good mix of power yet not like so powerful that you need a tripod or a rest to really focus in on. So I'm using a Vortex HD, Viper HD or something like that, 12x50s. And I really do like them. It's just for me, for the Western style hunting, like for example, there's spots where I'm hunting in Eastern Colorado and Western Kansas. I have a mix of both whitetail deer and mule deer utilizing the same properties, and sometimes it's tough to tell, and I'm getting better at it, but sometimes it's tough to tell if that's a mule deer or if that's a whitetail.
Right.
And with my current binoculars, if they're a half a mile off, or you know, you really can't tell until you get closer to them. And sometimes, unfortunately, you can't until you actually get out there and start stalking them. So that's a big influencer. And then also, as I guess, mature in bow hunting, I'm getting more and more picky with the animals I want to shoot. So right. I want, now it's coming down to the lines of like, all right, I don't want to shoot that deer unless I know he's mature or has, you know, I'm not necessarily all caught up on the score, but I definitely want to shoot something that's 130, 140s or above, and then also be a 3 or 4 year old deer. So sometimes it's tough to tell from a long ways what's what and be able to decipher, is that a 100-inch deer or a 140-inch deer, or is he a 3 year old or is he a 2 year old? Right. So having the extra power of a spotting scope and would certainly help figure out some of the details and specifics, getting something, you know, in range and knowing what it is before you go after it.
Okay. All right. Moving on to number two in this category.
So number two, I'm going with a Canon EOS 80D DSLR camera. And
you said
the 80, camera I found.
The 80D?
Yeah, it's an 80D.
Okay.
Yeah, 80D. Yep. And it's a DSLR camera.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the one I was looking at came, the package I was looking at came with a couple lenses. And that came out to be about $1,500 for like a, for really, you know, a lens that's going to poke out their ways, and then a lens that's closer, for closer up. So a couple different lens options. And then I kind of left $500 in the budget for, you know, a good tripod, a good bag, memory cards, accessories and stuff that you have to buy along with that. So I didn't total everything up exactly what I needed, but based on that, I could definitely be right around that $2,000. And it wouldn't be hard to go well above $2,000. I was just looking at something that would fit that budget. As you probably know, I mean, right, cameras can get super expensive real quick.
Yep. I just purchased a Canon 5D Mark III this summer. And then I've had some other lenses and stuff. So it's one of those things where camera equipment like that, if you want to, and I'm kind of the kind of guy who's like, I want to pay for the quality, right? So especially with something like this, I make some side money off of photography. So,
nice.
So I want to buy a really good camera, but, is this because you want to start filming some of your hunts or taking still shots of some of your hunts?
Yeah, that's really the main reason for it. I don't think I want to jump right into actually like filming hunts. It just throws a whole, I've done that before and I kind of got out of it, and it just throws a whole different kind of ball game, I guess, into your hunts. And
yeah,
It's a lot tougher than what people think, and it just adds a whole nother element. So yeah, now that I have a blog and I do a lot of like Western hunting, and yeah, the more I kind of get into it, I just want to be able to document different things and take really high quality like still photos, and then do a little bit of video on the side, like if I can, like maybe a recovery video or maybe like different tutorials or kind of short 2-minute videos for YouTube for my blog and stuff like that. And everything's about hunting is what it comes back to. But yeah, I kind of just want to be able to take some really good photos and document things, as I go further into, I guess, my hunting career. So that's really the reason behind it.
Okay. So let's talk maybe you know this, maybe you don't. What kind of megapixels does this 80D have?
You know, I didn't look into it too in depth. I know it shoots like 1080p HD video.
Okay.
And maybe I would go with a different model camera. I just pulled up this one because it was in the budget I was looking for, but maybe I would go with something other than a Canon or whatever, but I wasn't looking for something necessarily top of the line, but something that wasn't bottom of the barrel either. And I think that's where this price point kind of really put me in, which would be perfect for me.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Cool. So, a video camera, it's a video slash still camera and, some accessories to go along with it. Cool. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of unique. I didn't think something like that was going to be coming down the line, but, I think that's one thing that if you're serious about hunting, whether you're just, you know, hunting by yourself or you have a family and you take your family hunting, really good quality pictures can be, I think are very important, especially if you're the kind of guy who's like me, who, you know, I'm getting ready to build an office. I'm going to transition the nursery to an office, in my house here pretty soon. And I have all these cool pictures that I want to hang in there of, you know, me and my wife fishing, my daughter's first fish she ever caught, you know, some of my trophy pictures from, previous hunts. And, I think that has a lot to say. If you invest in a camera, a decent camera, some of those memories can last for a long time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And right now I've just been using my iPhone, right? And you can take some all right photos, but they're not nearly as good as what you're going to get with a camera like this. And you're right. I mean, it's something that you can look back on, and it's not necessarily something that necessarily makes you a better hunter. Although I guess if you were videoing like your actual shot, you could go back and look at the shot placement and where it hit. And that would be a good tool, but I'm looking at it as more along the lines to really preserve those memories, really shoot some badass pictures, use it for my blog, all that stuff. And I think it would, I would really like to get one.
Gotcha. All right. And now the last product in this $2,000 range.
So this one's kind of a little bit off the wall too, but I decided to go with a truck bed camper. A used truck bed camper, because there wasn't anything I could get for a new one that would fit this budget.
Okay. So, now explain to me on this truck bed camper. Fits in the bed of your truck, obviously. Are you looking at something like a pop-up or something that's already up?
So there's you can get either or. Typically what I'm finding more along the lines of this price range under $2,000, you're probably going to have to go with a pop-up truck bed camper.
Okay.
But my buddy just picked one up. I think he only spent like $1,000 on it, and it needed a little bit of TLC, and he put some different stuff into it. It's a solid body, so you don't have to do anything once you walk in or set anything up. So I really think I could find either or. I would like a rigid frame where it's just fully enclosed and you don't have to pop it up.
Yeah.
Just for the fact of not having to do anything once you get to where you're going.
Right.
But I've also kind of thought about it too for like clearance issues. So like, for example, like going up in the mountains, there's some really tight roads with some overhanging branches or trees and stuff kind of overhanging some of these, I guess you'd call them roads, but they're more along the lines of kind of remote kind of Jeep trails.
Yep.
And I think the pop-up would be a little bit better just for clearance, because it collapses down a little bit shorter. So I'm kind of up in the air, but I think either or would be fine.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I have a pop-up Coleman camper that my dad gave me, and I'll sell it to you, but you'll have to cut the wheels off and like do some kind of custom job to put it in the bed of your truck.
All right, man. We'll do some redneck ingenuity there. We'll have a beer and we'll go at it.
That's probably the worst thing.
I thought about a pop-up camper, because a pop-up camper used one would also probably fit in the same budget. But I was just thinking along the lines of like Western hunting.
Right.
And some of these roads are really tight. They're really rugged. So I kind of want everything all in the bed of my truck, and I can still store stuff in there, throw gear in there. You can throw you see a lot, if you need extra storage, you can get one of those hitch mounted kind of racks that you can throw extra coolers and what on. But for the style of hunting I'm doing, whether it's kind of Western hunting and I'm kind of parking at a road and then going from there, or really where I'm going out to in Eastern Colorado and Kansas, would really help out a lot, because I'm either having to set up a tent and I'll camp out in the farmer's backyard, or I'll get a cheap hotel room. And, you know, so I'm either having to pay like, you know, $50 to $100 for a hotel room a night, or I have to go through and set up a tent and it's cold out, so you're not sleeping as good and it's uncomfortable sometimes. So I think a truck bed camper would really suit me well for the style of hunting I do and trips that I go on, and still be comfortable and still have the storage I need. And I think it would just be a great tool for me to have for my own style of hunting. Now, if I just had property that I was hunting on out the back door all the time and didn't have to travel or camp anywhere, or I didn't go on any out of state trips, I wouldn't need it. But for what I do and where I have to go to hunt, it's been on the list actually for a while. So that's, again, probably something I will have within the next year or so.
Okay. Well, while I am thinking about it, why don't you remind everybody what your blog is again?
My blog is transitionwild.com. And really it's because I'm originally from Michigan. And so I moved out to Colorado about a year and a half ago. And really it just kind of documents and entails primarily hunting, but the differences between kind of more of a Midwestern tree stand hunter to more of a Western big game hunter. So that's really what a lot of the focus is. I do some product reviews on there. I do some kind of informational, educational, how-to tip articles. And I'm kind of just using it, again, too, to document some of my hunts, own personal hunts, that are more like a journal as well. And I can go back and look on those for long term. But yeah, check it out, transitionwild.com.
Okay. Now, in regards to a year, I know you currently don't have kids, right?
Yep. No kids.
No kid. Are you married? I forget. No.
Nope.
Okay. So you're not married. You got a girlfriend. You're a single guy. How much money do you typically spend a year on, would you say, hunting products? And go ahead and include, if you're using, like, say, like a camera or a sleeping bag or something like that for hunting trips, go ahead and add that in as well.
Yeah, so I would say this year would be kind of out of the norm of what I typically spend. But for example, like what I just mentioned, I'm used to hunting in Michigan, or I was used to hunting in Michigan, and moving out west hunting elk or mule deer or big game, it just requires different gear that you need. So I would say I spent, I don't even want to probably know, but some of the stuff I didn't necessarily need this year, like a new bow and things like that. But
yeah.
Gosh, I probably spent this year alone probably $2,500, $3,000. But this was kind of out of the norm. Typically I'll spend about probably $500 to $1,000. If you're not counting like gas and counting like gas and hotels and stuff like that, or yeah, just more like gear?
We don't want to add that number.
Yeah. I'd say just on gear, probably about $500, and a lot of that stuff is broadheads and arrows and you know, maybe a target. I've bought a lot of the stuff that I need as far as tree stands and binoculars and range finders, but this year I really kind of upgraded my gear as far as clothing. So I went with Sitka Gear and bought a lot of their stuff, just because Western hunting, I mean, you gotta be able to stay out in the elements and be comfortable and lightweight and waterproof and windproof, and that I feel like does a good job. Upped the binoculars, upgraded those, bought some camping gear and lightweight tents and a good backpack and a new bow, and I kind of splurged this year, but it was some stuff that I needed, because you just flat out need it for the style hunting you do out here. And some of it was just overdue from what I just needed to upgrade in general. So it's going to vary, but typically I don't get too carried away.
Right. Okay. So, and we talked a little bit about this before the, before we started recording, but you also, cause we have just a little bit of time left and I'm kind of interested. You just purchased a new bow, this week, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You had, what was that bow that you ended up purchasing?
It's a 2016 Hoyt Defiant. It's the 30 inch axle to axle. It's not the carbon,
right?
But I got the aluminum riser. So yeah, the Hoyt Defiant.
Okay. And why did you decide to go with a new bow this year?
So I currently am using a Hoyt from about 2008, and okay. It wasn't one of their flagship bows. It was one I bought while I was in college, and I kind of had a budget of around, you know, $500 to $600. And I think it ended up being about $600 when I bought it.
Okay.
And so it was kind of along the lines of I didn't necessarily need an upgrade, but with hunting out west, you're typically taking a little bit longer shots. So you want something a little bit quicker, a little bit flatter shooting. And something that's a little bit lighter weight too. So I've shot the new Hoyts. I've really liked them, and so I decided to go with it and definitely upgrade. And I actually haven't shot I've shot the Defiance and the Hoyts before, but I haven't shot this one. I literally just got it a few days ago and have yet to set it up. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good bow. And I went with Hoyt just for the reason of, and you watch their videos and what they do in their R&D and testing, and I can attest to it just on my own personal use and for many of my buddies who have used Hoyts. Literally, you can beat those things up and they keep going. And for me, durability, especially Western hunting, that means the most to me. I want something that's going to hold up. I can beat around. I took my last Hoyt the second day I had it, my dad took it, drew it back and dry fired it. I was pissed, but it was fine. It was perfectly fine. The thing was bulletproof. I've dropped that thing out of two trees. I didn't have to do a dang thing to it. It was perfectly fine. I was shooting at a deer one time. I slapped the cam on the rail of my climber, knocked the whole string off, blew up the arrow. The bow itself, we put the string back on, it was perfectly fine. Hoyt, from what I can tell and what I've used and many of my friends experience, durability is number one. Plus, they're a good shooting bow. You really can't go wrong with today's bows and their performance. And some have a little bit different draw cycles. Some are a little bit more forgiving. But really, at the end of the day, what sells me for a hardcore bow hunter or for somebody who's putting as much time into it as I am is the durability and knowing that it's going to perform and won't let me down in rugged conditions.
Nice. Cool. Mr. Parr, I tell you what, man, thanks for coming on the show and taking part of this little experiment that we're doing here on this, as far as this conversation is concerned about products and gear and whatnot. Do you plan on heading back out to Eastern Colorado here anytime soon to continue trying to seal the deal on a whitetail?
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm hoping to get back this weekend with Thanksgiving coming around. I don't know if I'll have the time, so I'll be spending some time with family and that I have out here. But if I have the chance, I'll definitely get out this weekend. If not, I will do more of a late season hunt, probably December time frame when it gets colder, some snow on the ground, because where I'm hunting currently, it's just bedding area surrounded by food. So I've got the two most important things to a whitetail for late season. I think it could be pretty dynamite if I don't tag out here in the next week or so. But yeah, looking forward to getting back out there and keeping at it.
Perfect. Well, hey, thanks again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Dan. Anytime.
Wishlist podcast number 2 is in the books. Thanks to Adam for coming on the show and taking time to, look up all these products that he wishes he had and share those with us. If you guys want to be on this podcast, send me an email, ninefingerchronicles@gmail.com, and you can talk about 9 products in that same price category. I'm not sure how many more of these I'm going to do. Just depends on what the feedback's like and what my downloads look like. Typically, if I get higher downloads, that means people are interested in what I'm having to say. So about those products or whatever series that I'm doing. So I might continue this a little bit further. What else? I feel like I always go, before I talk. Anyway, huge shout out to Exodus Trail Cameras and Deer Lab for sponsoring the podcast. If you guys, Cyber Monday is coming up fast, and that's when a lot of people do online shopping. Don't forget about Exodus Outdoor Gear and Exodus Trail Cameras. If you guys are looking for a new trail camera this year, I strongly suggest Exodus, and you can save $20 by entering the code 9Fingers. That's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, all together, no spaces, during checkout of a purchase of the trail camera. Also, I've already talked about Deer Lab, and that is deerlab.com/9Fingers. Go visit that, find out more information, sign up for their 30-day trial period. Both would be great gifts. Other than that, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram. I know I do a lot of different type of pictures on Instagram than I do on Facebook and Twitter. So if you don't have an Instagram account, get one and follow me. Go to iTunes and leave a review. And that's about it. I think that's all I have to say today. Hopefully you guys are having a great 4-day weekend. Hopefully you don't have to work. If you do, hopefully this podcast got you through and you have some leftovers to go home to. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really appreciate every download and every person who takes time to listen to this podcast. I'm just an average Joe sitting in their basement, man. That's all I am. And I'm very appreciative of you guys taking time out of your day to spend with me. Thanks again. And man, it's hunting season. We know this. And as we're climbing up in the tree, be sure to be safe and wear your damn safety harness. Have a good weekend.